It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Okay, welcome back to hour number two. Thanks to Mario Cristobal and Don Bailey Jr. in hour number one. Welcome to the next portion of our show, and always great to have with us University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. And our basketball journey, well, kind of begins tomorrow with an exhibition game, but next Monday our journey begins as the Canes will open the season against Fairleigh Dickinson. Coach L, always great to speak with you. Good evening, and how are you?
I'm doing good, Joe. Nice to talk to you, as always.
You have been working with your team. Well, I guess it started back in maybe May or July, but now more seriously here in the fall, in September. What have you seen from your team so far?
Well, we started workouts for the summer July 10th and took it to the end of July, like July 26th. So we had several weeks there with the guys. That was nice. We were able to lay the foundation for what we wanted to do once school began. And then we started back up at the end of August all the way through September. And now it's really gearing up into October, where we have to have all our offense in, all our defenses in. We have to be able to go against man. We got to be able to go against zone. We got to have a press attack and all of the fundamentals that our players need to know. And we have 10 new guys, so it's been quite a challenge for me and my staff, but we've enjoyed it because we've got a great group of kids.
Yeah, the players, my perception would be watching some of the practices, and I haven't been there in a couple weeks, but some of the practices, it seems like you've got a team that gets along very well.
Oh, yeah. Actually, Joe, I'm sitting in my car outside of Fleming Steakhouse, and we're having a team dinner. The players are in there. It's the last team dinner before we start the season. I wanted the guys to have just a bonding opportunity to talk basketball, but, you know, really socialize with each other. The coaches are there supervising. It's a nice night. I'm happy to step outside, though, Joe, and talk hoops with you.
Well, I like Fleming's. They have Tomahawk Tuesday, so I like that a lot.
Well, it's Tuesday.
Yeah, and they have nice tomahawk steaks. You do have a couple of injuries. Has that set you back, or will that set you back?
Well, one injury for sure, because his status is unknown as to when he'll possibly be back. We have a player, a transfer from Idaho State by the name of Kyrie Huey. And Kyrie Huey, during the summer and this fall, was our leading shot blocker, our second leading rebounder, and was shooting 70% from the field. He was a great lob threat because he's 6'9", he's got 7'3" wingspan, and just a terrific, hardworking big guy. But he had an injury to his hand, and we just don't know when we'll get him back, or even if we'll get him back this season.
Wow. Lynn Kidd, and he was going against Lynn Kidd every day, but Lynn Kidd comes in, one of your transfers. He's 6'10", very efficient offensively. How do you hope that he impacts your team this year?
Well, Lynn Kidd, 6'10", 240, played at Clemson and Virginia Tech, was a terrific double-figure scorer, and we need him to be like an all-league caliber player. He's a great kid, works really hard. He's athletic. He has a dynamic right-hand and left-hand jump hook. And when he keeps it simple and just uses those weapons, he's very, very hard to guard.
The last scrimmage I was at, Nigel Pack made about 100 threes. It seems like he's rounding back into the form of a couple years ago.
I would say that's absolutely accurate, Joe. He's finally healthy again. Last year, in December, his knee started bothering him, and they never let up. He ended up taking weeks off. He came back and then sprained an ankle, took some time off, came back, hurt his knee again. So he was never healthy. Right now he's healthy and playing great.
And he is in the backcourt with, well, you got a lot of guys in the backcourt, but Jalen Blackman came in from Stetson. You have the exciting freshman, Jahlil Bethia. You have A.J. Stanton-McCray. Again, a guy comes in from Samford. So you have some experience, and then you have Jahlil Bethia, who is an exciting young player.
Well, Jahlil is a McDonald's All-American, an outstanding athlete. He and I have talked a great deal. He knows he still has a lot to learn. He potentially can be a terrific player, but he also has some things that he must improve from a fundamental standpoint. You know, shot selection. Most freshmen think they can shoot the shots that they shot in high school, and in college, those shots are going to be defended very well.
Yeah.
But the guy you didn't mention who's coming on very strong is Austin Schwartz. He was a top 50 player, 6'5", can really shoot. And of all our freshmen, he's probably improved the most in the month of October. So we're already October 28th. In these last 4 weeks, he's really been working on his game. If you had told me back in July that he was going to be in our rotation, I would have said, no way, he might be the last guy on the roster. But right now, he is playing very, very well. We had a scrimmage yesterday. He played very well in the scrimmage. We got an exhibition game tomorrow. We'll see how he does against outside competition. Then, of course, as you mentioned, Joe, we toss it up for real on Monday at home, 7 o'clock, against Fairleigh Dickinson, the team that knocked off, I think it was Purdue, in the NCAA tournament 2 years ago.
Right. The two other guys, Blackman, Jalen Blackman, who averaged 21 points a game a year ago, then A.J. Stanton-McCray, he gives you some bulk at 6'4". What is the biggest challenge those two players are going to have? Because they're kind of moving up, I guess, a level in play, one from Samford, one from Stetson, and moving into the ACC.
Yeah, both of them, from an offensive standpoint, are for sure going to be able to contribute. The size of the teams we play, though, are going to impact how much they can help us defensively, and that's obviously a priority. We must improve defensively, and we must rebound the ball better. Jalen is an outstanding three-point shooter. He's a good ball handler, can play the one or two. A.J. Stanton-McCray is 6'5". He can play the two or three, and they both can shoot the three. A.J.'s a better defender, rebounder at 6'5". But then we also are playing Matthew Cleveland at a guard spot. He'll be battling for the third guard position. So Matt had an injury that's kept him out the last 2 weeks, but I think he's going to come back this week, maybe later on maybe Thursday or Friday.
Okay, well, that's good news. And then Brandon Johnson, he gives you some bulk and a guy that can step out, transfer from East Carolina. I think you were pretty pleased with what you saw, with what you have seen from him so far in practice, right?
Yeah, he's been the most consistent player. He's very, very smart. He's our leading rebounder. He's our best passer that's not a guard. You know, he's 6'8". The guards can really pass too, but Brandon really has the unique ability to find the open man. We're starting to run some plays for him, not to score, but to actually pass. But I like the way he plays. I think he'll be a good leader, a senior leader on the court. We're really counting on him.
Coach, you have, and I thought when you had prior to the injury of Kyrie Huey, but this is probably still true. You have a lot of experience on your team. You have more size this year with Kidd at 6'10", Brandon Johnson at 6'8". Do you have more versatility on this roster where you and your staff going into games, maybe you can play different ways if you have to or if you want to?
Yeah, Joe, until Kyrie Huey got hurt, we had already figured out our strategy. Once Kyrie went out, then we had to figure out a strategy when Lynn Kidd's not on the floor.
Right.
Because when Lynn Kidd's out on the floor, along with Brandon, we have two really good rebounders. But when Lynn goes out, we all of a sudden will probably have to go to small ball again and play five out, which we are now just beginning to work on.
Mm-hmm. I also should mention, because you talked about Austin Swartz developing, and I don't think anybody does a better job developing players than you and your staff. And then that gets me to Paul Jobe, who came in here, and you've kind of worked with him, and I don't know where he stands right now, but it seems like he works so hard, and another guy in your developmental program probably can help you with a couple of minutes per game or more.
Oh, yeah. He's definitely going to be in the rotation. He can play probably three or four positions. In our scrimmage yesterday, we keep plus minus, and plus is obviously good, and he had the highest plus on the team. He had a plus 30 when he was on the court, and that was fantastic. So we are counting on Paul this year for sure.
A plus 30, that's Nigel Pack's number from a year ago.
Yeah. Nigel Pack, you know, he's our captain, he's our leader, and, you know, if he stays healthy, we got a heck of a player at the point.
You always emphasize defense. You talk about defense a lot. Where do you think your team is in terms of where you want them to be defensively?
Well, in the summer, we were awful. I couldn't believe having 10 new guys, and none of them seemed to focus on defense at all. They all just wanted to score the ball, and we were scoring at a very high rate. In our scrimmages, the first scrimmage, the score was 109-97.
Yeah.
So both teams could put the ball in the basket, but no one could guard. We've improved dramatically in that category, but we haven't faced outside competition to truly evaluate if it's us that's improved or the offense is not quite as good now. So we'll see. Not tomorrow night. Tomorrow night we're playing St. Leo's. It's the team that beat us back in 2012, the year 2012-2013 season when we won the ACC championship. St. Leo's beat us in the exhibition game. And tomorrow night's team, his team is likely to shoot 43s. So our fans want to come out and see an entertaining game. Tomorrow night they can do it.
You had one of the funniest lines ever when you said, we beat North Carolina three times, but we couldn't beat St. Leo.
Yeah, we beat Duke that year by 27. We beat Carolina by 26. We beat Carolina three times at Carolina, in Coral Gables, and for the championship of the ACC. But we were trying some things. That's why I don't really understand why in college basketball we can't have multiple scrimmages and exhibition games, play them in front of a crowd or what have you, play them against Division I teams, because that's really the best way to prepare for your season.
Right.
You know, they're not on your record, but you can play the game and substitute freely and learn about the different players. The NCAA acts like the non-conference schedule is just as important as your conference race, but you're still experimenting in the early going. You're not as complete a team until probably sometime in January.
Well, along those lines, I probably have an ignorant question for you, and that would be, how are some of these teams playing these so-called charity games? How do you eventually schedule one of those? How do they come along?
So the NCAA has made an exception to the scrimmage and exhibition game rule, where you can play a game for charity, and the money will go to underprivileged kids or the Cancer Society or what have you, and all the donations to the game. So people can come and watch, like Duke played Arizona State. That money, I think, was for the medical center. Or maybe it was children. I'm not really sure. But that allowed it to be on TV and really have like an in-season type game.
Interesting. Before I let you go, maybe your overview of what you think the ACC might look like, because is it probably hard to get a read on with so many new players? I imagine a ton of new players have come into the league.
Joe, listen, this number blows my mind. 104 players in the ACC transferred out last spring, and 104 players transferred in. Oh. I mean, we have 10 new guys. We have four freshmen and six transfers. It's crazy. A school like Duke that, you know, is so traditional that they don't bring in transfers, they don't have guys transfer out, they had seven transfers last year. All the guys now that can put their name in the portal leave and go someplace else where they think the grass is greener. That's happening at a very high rate. There's 4,300 basketball players in Division I men's basketball, and 2,000 of them transferred, almost half.
Holy mackerel. I know you mentioned the new players you have on your squad. If we were to go back several months to the offseason, what was that like for you and your staff? Because now you become personnel director and general manager and all of those things, right?
Well, I think that's what led to Tony Bennett resigning his head coaching job at the University of Virginia.
Yep.
The job, as he put it, he didn't sign up for this. You know, he was someone that liked to build from the ground up, bring in freshmen, have a few red shirts, get them older, develop them in the system. And then when they become juniors and seniors, you got a really good team. And the team that won the national championship was built that way for them. But you can't really do that anymore. Guys are all one and done. Not one and done to go to the NBA necessarily, although that's a possibility. But one and done, hey, if I don't have a great year, I'm putting my name in the portal and going someplace else. So it becomes, coaching is like being an NBA general manager, a coach, an accountant. It's really challenging.
Yeah. You get it started.
Oh, excuse me.
You get it started on Monday against Fairleigh Dickinson, have a couple of games after that, and then this non-conference schedule ramps up in a hurry, because then we go to the Charleston Classic. You're going to play Drake, the team that we faced in the NCAA tournament a couple of years ago. Also a part of your non-conference is Arkansas and John Calipari, and a trip to New York to take on Tennessee.
Yeah, that non-conference schedule, the net has changed the way you build your schedule, and I've looked at it closely, and I hope I'm right. I have been in the past. My staff has done a great job. We educate each other about what we're hearing and what we're doing. My former assistants, I'm on the phone with them about how they're building their schedules. But you have to do two things, Joe. You have to beat teams that are, you know, not top-level teams. You have to beat them by 30, and then you have to play a certain number of quad one games and at least win half of those. So we're going to play probably five quad one, quad two type games, and then five or six teams that are not quad one or quad two.
Well, Tennessee, I think, was the Elite Eight last year. And we'll have them in Madison Square Garden. You know, Arkansas's got Calipari, so he'll have a loaded roster. Fairleigh Dickinson on Monday. We tip things off with Fairleigh Dickinson. You mentioned their upset at Purdue a couple years ago. I think we were in Albany that night. What are you expecting on Monday?
You know, one of the things right now, and I try to explain this to the players, we're so focused on us, it's not about the opponent. Because if we can't execute our own plan, then we're going to struggle against anybody. So Fairleigh Dickinson, we'll expect they'll play man-to-man, they'll play zone, they might trap us. So we've got to be ready for everything.
All right, Coach, I'm going to let you go be with your team and enjoy that nice steak dinner. I'll see you tomorrow before the game. And then Monday we start another journey together against Fairleigh Dickinson, looking forward to the upcoming season.
All right, Joe, it's the start of my 54th season as a coach.
Whew,
so I'm looking forward to it.
54. All right, that sounds great. Okay, Coach, see you tomorrow.
See you, Joe.
All right, that's University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. Still to come, we'll talk with Coach Cullop. She's coming up, talk about the women's team. They had their exhibition game last night, and that was an easy win. So we'll get her thoughts on where her team is right now and some of those expectations. Also on Saturday, Miami and Duke. We'll have that for you beginning at 8 a.m., 12 o'clock. We will kick things off against Manny Diaz and the Duke Blue Devils. All right, let me talk to you for a moment about Williamson Cadillac, Miami's luxury dealership, founded over 50 years ago, and they are more than just a dealership. They are our friends and neighbors, run by Ed Williamson, his lovely wife Carol. Williamson Cadillac has built a loyal client base by staying focused on the customer experience. Pretty simple, right? Customers are treated like family. If you want to be treated like family and you want to purchase a new Cadillac, my suggestion, Williamson Cadillac. New vehicles are arriving every single day, which means Williamson is absolutely going to have the new Cadillac you're looking for. Come in today, experience Williamson Cadillac's preferred atmosphere. Easy to find, located on US 1 at 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto. You can go online to WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Get the most out of the South Florida lifestyle and experience a new Cadillac. You want great customer service? Then I recommend Williamson Cadillac. Williamson Cadillac, your luxury dealership. Williamson Cadillac. Williamson is Miami.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Okay, so ESPN is running their playoff predictor tonight. And their playoff predictor, they have Miami at a 88% chance of making the playoffs, 89% chance of making the playoffs. They also have the big game, of course, this weekend is Ohio State and Penn State. And you wonder, is that a knockout game for Ohio State? A two-loss Ohio State, can they get into the playoff? I guess they could still win the Big Ten. I don't know what the rest of the standings are in the Big Ten, but they would be behind Penn State and, of course, behind Oregon because Oregon's in the Big Ten. So how many teams can the Big Ten get into right now? They've got in the playoff predictor, Oregon, Penn State, and Ohio State. That's three of the Big Ten. No, four, Indiana. That would be crazy, right? Big Ten get four teams in. Miami, as I mentioned, Miami controls their own destiny. And if you were to say to me at any time, I hope this is not a broadcaster's jinx, but if you were to say to me at any time in the last 35 years of my broadcast history with the University of Miami, if you said, Joe, would you sign up for the University of Miami going undefeated with four games left, and those four games are Duke, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and Syracuse. Would you take that? I would say, where do I sign? No disrespect to those teams. Georgia Tech and Miami, the series I'm pretty sure is even. I think when we dig into the research next week, we'll find out that I think it's like 18-18 in the series. Georgia Tech has been playing without their quarterback, Haynes King. He's supposed to come back next week. Syracuse, they are improved this year. New head coach. They've been miserable for, I don't know, the last 10 years or so. New head coach, a lot of new players, new quarterback, but they hit a tripwire last week against Pittsburgh. They threw three interceptions. It was a three pick sixes, three turnovers in the first half, and that was pretty much the end of the game for them. And then Wake Forest has pretty much struggled all season long. They did go out to Stanford and beat Stanford last week, but that's the road ahead for Miami. Ohio State has Penn State on Saturday. That's also a 12 o'clock game right against the University of Miami game. We'll watch the Canes and Duke, and then every now and then shift our eyes over to see what's going on with Penn State and Ohio State. And then you wonder how many teams will the SEC get in there. Georgia plays Florida this weekend. Georgia has the one loss. Alabama has two losses. Texas A&M's undefeated in conference play. So do they get A&M, Texas, and Georgia? Texas and Texas A&M will play, I think that's a Thanksgiving weekend. Also, there's this wild scenario out there where there could be three undefeated teams conference-wise in the ACC, and somebody gets squeezed out of the ACC championship game. Now, I do think there are some games coming up. For example, on Saturday, Pitt and SMU, both undefeated in conference play. Somebody gets knocked out there. And then Pitt still has to play Clemson. And Clemson this week plays Louisville. Might be a tough game for Clemson, although Louisville is 0-8 against Clemson since joining the league. But that's a 7:30 game on Saturday, so I should be home after our game, after our post-game tailgate to catch that one. At any rate, a lot of scenarios, a lot of football to be played. And here's the good news. The University of Miami playing relevant games in November, exactly what we all wanted. Ranked fifth in the country, undefeated. Right now, they're in the playoffs. I mean, this is the playoffs. Every game is a playoff. So hopefully we'll have a great crowd. Hopefully we will have a great crowd on Saturday. Tickets remain. So if you're looking for something to do on Saturday and you've been waiting for this kind of season for University of Miami football, jump on board and join us Saturday at Hard Rock Stadium for Miami and Duke. Monday night, we've got Miami and Fairleigh Dickinson in basketball, men's basketball. And I want to mention that Monday morning, how about this? We kick off the women's basketball season against Stetson at 11 a.m. That's when they bring in all the school kids. But 11 a.m., Miami and Stetson. See, I was right. Vic Bermudez tells me Miami and Georgia Tech, series tied 14-14. Georgia Tech's always been a pain in Miami's ass. So 14-14, I guess we'll worry about that next week when we go to Atlanta to take on the Yellow Jackets. Okay, Saturday, Miami and Duke. Monday morning, Miami Stetson women's basketball. Monday night, Miami Fairleigh Dickinson men's basketball. We'll talk with Coach Culp when we continue right after this.
Now back to Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. Joe Zagacki, Trevor Harris is our producer tonight. And back on April the 5th of this year, seems like it was yesterday, Tricia Culp was named the University of Miami women's basketball coach, the eighth head coach in program history, joining us now on the eve of the beginning of the women's basketball season. Coach, welcome to the Hurricane Hotline, and we look forward to having you on the show this year.
Thanks for having me.
What did you learn about your team in your exhibition game last night?
I think, number one, we're getting better, and our chemistry is really developing. You know, it takes time when you got a lot of new pieces together, but I really love how scrappy and aggressive and competitive this group is, and they pick up things pretty quickly.
You do have a bit of an overhaul of the roster. What did you have in mind? What was your vision when you put this roster together?
Well, I think trying to find, first, quality people. You know, I don't think you build anything of significance unless you have great chemistry. So in addition to finding, you know, talent and kids who care about their education, we also wanted to make sure that just we had really strong chemistry and really strong character on our team. And I was really pleased the Cavenders decided to come back because I think they're two of the hardest workers I've ever coached. But I also love that Jazz Roberts and Lamaya Hilton are still here. But then you look at the other transfers that we took. You know, Nat Marshall is a really skilled 6'4", you know, post player that can run the floor. Cam Williams was a starter at Michigan and was a force down low. And then Darion Rogers can really shoot it from deep. I like the pieces that we found.
I've said this before. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody shoot free throws better than Haley Cavender. I mean, her delivery of free throws is spectacular.
No, she's a great shooter all the way around. Great three-point shooter, you know, great free throw shooter. And also, you know, she's got a really, really great IQ for the game. She's a joy to coach.
Jasmine Roberts, one of the players that does come back. How does she fit in for you? And maybe talk a little bit more about the style of play that you want to see from your team this year.
Yeah, Jazz is just so versatile, and that's what's awesome about her is that she's a three-level scorer. You know, she can shoot the three, she can hit a pull-up, and she can drive. And then I would also add, you know, I'd like to post her up some. She's a strong, taller guard. And so, you know, I love that. I love that she's a veteran, someone that I think, you know, can remind our younger players what it takes to win at this level. And then our style of play, you know, we really want to run. In the first 7 to 8 seconds of the clock, we're really looking to score and transition and push the ball because we've got really good shooters. But then I also, you know, we're going to run an offense that's pretty equal opportunity. I mean, our kids are understanding the reads of it, but I really like what I'm seeing so far. You know, the teams that I've coached that have ran this offense have traditionally been, you know, top 30 in assist turnover ratio in the country. And we want to shoot the ball well from the free throw line. That's something in our exhibition and closed door scrimmage we did not do, but today was another focus of it. I thought we did a better job today, and we're going to keep climbing every day to be better at it.
When you brought in, you know, along the recruiting trail, what jumped out to you about the response of players and their interest in coming to the University of Miami? What did you think about why they wanted to come to Miami? Because there are so many great things to offer, but what jumped out to you during that process?
Well, I think what's exciting is people understand, number one, what a great education it is. You know, it's a $93,000 a year private education. You can't beat that. Secondly, you know, the ACC, you know, they love the fact that they can play in one of the best conferences in the country. And then three, in a very storied program. You know, Kate Meyer did a wonderful job building this program. It's our job to maintain it and to do a wonderful job in the future with it. But I really love the fact they know they're coming to a program that's won before and can win again. And they want to play at a high level.
Mm-hmm. You open the season on Monday at 11 a.m. against Stetson. I believe that's the game where we bring lots of kids in. So it's going to be noisy. It's going to be quite noisy. It's actually a lot of fun. It's going to be noisy, a bit shrieky, but lots of energy.
A lot of people don't know this. You know, my mother is no longer with us, but my mother was a grade school teacher. And when I first started doing this type of a game at the University of Evansville, one thing I loved about it was that all the teachers in my hometown area would bring kids that maybe didn't have a chance to come to a game. And so what I love about the grade school game is, you know, no matter where they come from or what their background is, they get to come to this game and be a part of something fun. What more of a fun field trip can you find? And expose them to our game early so that hopefully they grow up in our gym And hopefully someday in the future that we can say, you know, this girl just joined our team. And way back when, she came to our grade school game.
Yeah, no need for coffee on Monday because they will bring a lot of energy. There's no question about that.
Definitely.
The ACC, before I talk about your non-conference schedule, what are your thoughts on, and again, we just talked with Coach L about the ACC and men's basketball, and over 100 players went out and over 100 came in, so maybe hard to get a read on ACC basketball, but what are your thoughts on ACC women's basketball? You know it's going to have quality players and quality coaching.
Definitely. You know, I think when you look at preseason polls, they don't really mean a whole lot. But I do think the upper echelon picks were very spot on. You know, it's a great league for a reason. And then you add, you know, the likes of Stanford and Cal and SMU, but particularly Stanford in their tradition to our league, it only elevates it. So, you know, I don't see there being any easy games in our league, but that's not what we signed up for. We came to this league to be great. And so I think the great thing for our players is having an opportunity each and every night to compete in one of the best leagues in the country and test ourselves. But that also means in non-conference play, we've got to get better each and every night when we play. And, you know, we're excited to play Florida. We're excited to play Vandy. We're excited to play Oregon State out in the tournament in Hawaii. But, you know, more importantly, we're just excited to compete against someone else. I think our players are tired of competing against my practice guys.
I was going to ask you about the two things in your non-conference. One, though, jumps out at me, of course, it's the Florida Gators. So, you know, you probably saw a little bit of that during football season at the beginning of the year. So you have to go up to Gainesville to play the Gator. We call them the Gator, not the Gators. We call them the Gator.
Well, you know, it's funny. I went to a coach's clinic up in Gainesville not too long ago, maybe a month and a half, 2 months ago. And then I went to a high school tournament in June up there. So I've actually been to Gainesville twice since I took the job. But, I'm sure it'll be a really fun game. Obviously, anything in-state, there's a lot of pride.
Maui Classic, you got that one. This is interesting to me because the Maui Classic is sandwiched in between two conference games. So that's not easy.
Well, the one positive is, you know, when that tournament is over with, our players will be flying to home for Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
And at least get some rest. Mm-hmm. If we were coming back to play a conference game right away, I'd be a little nervous. But I'm glad they get to go home and see their loved ones and then come back and practice before we play that other conference game. But that's going to be a little different for me. I've never had conference games that were kind of in the middle or before some of your non-conference games. But, you know, we'll adjust. We look forward to getting rolling.
You mentioned, Coach Culp, that the players are excited to play against somebody else, probably because of playing against each other in your practices. But maybe take us through some of the things that you emphasize in practice and what your practices are like for them.
Well, you know, we're pretty up-tempo. I think, you know, half our practice is always defense. And Coach Fitz on our staff and Jesse Ivey, they both are kind of the heads of our defense. I let them have a lot of power there because they're both great teachers and coaches and veterans. That's why they're my associate head coaches. Then the offense, you know, our whole staff has some input, but Coach Danielle Page and Muriel Page and I put our heads together to try to find and put our players in the best scenarios offensively. But really, you know, we try to be very up-tempo. We're working on trying to make great decisions in our break and balancing the floor and spacing. I'm a big believer in trying to make everyone guard the width of the floor. Sometimes I think offenses can get a little bunched, and when you're not spaced correctly, shots are a little hard to come by. So we've done a lot of teaching up until this point, but I think our team is very aware we want to run. And I do think that in our exhibition game, we had a chance to really work on that. And work on our defense. We got a lot of steals, and we're able to get out and run. And that's something that we'd like to be a trademark of who we are.
Mm-hmm. Coach Culp is our guest here on the Hurricane Hotline. University of Miami women's basketball begins their season on Monday, 11 a.m. against Stetson. Then the following Monday, November the 11th, we'll take on Jacksonville at 7 o'clock. Coach, women's basketball probably right now, I don't know if it's ever been more popular, so this is probably a great time to be involved in women's basketball, right?
I would agree. You know, it's such a, you look at what even happened with collegiate women's basketball last year. You know, the women's tournament ratings actually outdrew the men for the first time ever. And then you look at the ratings and the attendance of the WNBA this summer. So we're so excited to try to catch some of that momentum and enthusiasm and translate that into building our fan base here at Miami. That's something that I think we can do and we want to do desperately. The grade school game will be a great start, but after that, we really want to make sure that we're getting people in the stands to see this team. I think they're going to really enjoy them. One thing we're going to do after games for people that want to meet our team is we're going to put 10 minutes on the clock, and when the game concludes, we're not going to the locker room. We're going to stay out and meet our fans. And so if people have young kids and they want them to be introduced to our players, it's a great chance to get to know them.
Yeah, because one minute they're a kid, and the next minute they're playing for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. And, you know, and the other thing is, you know, not only have we got us, but in this area, in the Doral area, the unrivaled 3-on-3 WNBA league is going to be starting in January. So, there's something all year long to watch about women's basketball in this area, and that's exciting.
On the recruiting trail, have you noticed, because of the popularity now for women to play basketball, have you noticed a difference on the recruiting trail?
You know, I think the biggest thing I notice is just not so much on the recruiting trail, but mainly when I'm watching, like I said, WNBA games and seeing packed houses. Yeah. When I'm able to find a game on TV instead of hunting for it on some app like we used to have to do for WNBA games, you know, to see more college games being sold out and even to have great environments. You know, I think that's been long lacking in women's basketball, and I think there's so much momentum and energy and excitement around our game that I think it's about to explode. And that's awesome for all of us as we try to elevate our game.
Yeah, I also wonder, because of the popularity of the WNBA this year and the way the games are played, if that makes college players, maybe high school players as well, more students of the game.
I definitely think so. You know, our players watch the WNBA. And, you know, sometimes we even talk to them about different players we'd love for them to try to emulate. There's things you're going to see us run that we've stolen from WNBA teams. Mm-hmm. So I do think there's a lot of carryover, and I love it when our players talk to me about watching a WNBA game because I do want them studying it. But I think there's so much to learn. And, you know, the game's really at an all-time high right now.
The game sets in on Monday at 11 a.m. That kicks off the season, or tips off the season, I should say. And I don't know if you've gotten to the point where you're diving into your scouting report yet, but what do you want to see from your team against Stetson on Monday?
Well, number one, Lynn Bree is a dear friend of mine. I've known her my whole career, so it's kind of ironic that's our first game. But I want to see scrappy defense. I want to see a team that makes them really work for their points and does a great job controlling the boards, that limits our turnovers, that makes sure that, you know, we've really value the basketball and that we share it well when people are open. You know, and then another thing is we've really been focusing on trying to hit our free throws. I'm a big believer in we don't beat ourselves, and that means we limit our turnovers. You know, we out-rebound folks and we make our free throws. And, you know, I think if you're doing some of those things, it makes the game a lot easier.
Very good. Coach, thank you for joining us here at the beginning of the season. And we look forward to doing this quite regularly during the regular season and talking about your team and the journey that you're going to be on this year with University of Miami women's basketball team.
Well, thank you, and I'm so excited to be here.
All right, that's University of Miami women's basketball coach Tricia Cullip joining us on the show. Thanks to Jim Larinaga, Mario Cristobal, Don Bailey Jr., Trevor Harris has been our producer.